I have worn straw sandals for 10 years to help innocent prisoners. I keep walking through towns and villages, shouting out about their innocence, appealing to each and every person.
Those are the words of Tairu Furukawa, a Buddhist monk and champion of the poor and prisoners on Japan's death row.
There are as many as 100 million people in Japan. How is it that innocent prisoners can be kept isolated? One day, maybe, some 20 or 30 years from now, everybody will know and help release them. I believe this will happen. And walk, today and tomorrow, till my last day.
Reverend Furukawa was born to a poor family in 1920, the eldest of 8 children. In 1940, he was sent as a soldier to China, but returned wounded to Japan, where he studied Buddhism and became head priest of a temple in his hometown in Saga Prefecture. After the war, he devoted himself to helping the poor, the sick, and those grieving the loss of loved ones in the conflict. His ministry eventually led him to Fukuoka Prison, where he became chaplain and cared especially for those who had been condemned to death. Reverend Furukawa became convinced of the innocence of 2 prisoners and worked tirelessly to have them released, a campaign that cost him his job. He became a self-taught detective and lawyer, digging up clues, filing motions, and lodging appeals on behalf of the 2 men. He sold everything his family had and begged throughout the country for signatures and alms to fund a campaign for retrial.
A world that cannot save even the life of one man, this I cannot believe. A world that does not execute any innocent prisoners, this I wish to believe and show to be true. For otherwise, I myself must remain unsaved and unable to live. I cannot take off my straw sandals.
Furukawa wandered the streets of Japan until his death in the year 2000, calling for justice for the innocent and an end to the death penalty. How many pairs of straw sandals did he consume throughout all those years? They must have been many by the time one of those prisoners he'd been fighting for, Kenjiro Ishii, was released in 1989, after 43 years behind bars. Furukawa had succeeded in commuting his death sentence in 1975, the same year Ishii's less fortunate jailmate was executed.
Physically, we are very poor, as you see, because my parents had to sell all the property they had.
Tairu Furukawa's daughter, Sayuri, is now wearing his sandals and trotting the uphill path seeking an end to the death penalty in Japan. She runs the Sai Meizan Schweitzer Temple, which her father established in 1973 in Kumamoto Province, in what was once their family home. Inspired by the Nobel laureate Dr. Albert Schweitzer's self-sacrificing work as a physician for Africa's poor and his global advocacy for a nuclear bomb-free world, Furukawa named the temple for his mentor, calling it Reverence for Life.
My father is not only a father to me, but also a spiritual leader or teacher to me. Besides, I think he was a great artist. So he was also a teacher in the field of art. It was quite natural things for us to carry on his work because our temple is an independent Buddhist temple and belonging to no religious school or sect, so free. And most Buddhist temples don't cope with any social problem that we cope with.
The reverence for life Furukawa bore was to take him back to China, to the place where Japanese imperial soldiers butchered more than 250,000 people in what is known as the Nanjing Massacre of 1937. The death toll far exceeded the numbers killed by the bombs at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. In 1984, the ascetic monk took a group of 100 Japanese to Nanjing on a pilgrimage of purification to ask forgiveness for the crimes perpetrated by other Japanese. It is a pilgrimage that has become a yearly ritual for Sayuri and members of the temple.
I feel deep sorrow for the victims. Every time I go there, I cried in my heart. So mostly young people in Japan don't know what happened in the past. So to let them know the truth, true history, we ask young people to come and join our journey to China and pray together. We will carry on our memorial services both here in Japan and in China too.
Furukawa deepened his knowledge of Christianity, studying its tenets and reading the Bible. As chance would have it, the Buddhist monk met a number of Catholic Severian missionaries working in Japan, and together in 1987, they opened the Saimezan, or Mountain of Life, Center for Interreligious Dialogue. It was to be the first religious institution for Buddhist-Christian activity in Japan. The interest it generated was enormous among people of all faiths. Some 2,000 people visited the center in its very first year.
In 1985, my father met Father Frank Sotkornura, Zabirian missionary father. He had the same dream as my father had, to create a center for interreligious dialogue. So we have just started work together to build Center for Religious Interreligious Dialogue. So there are many great persons who I deeply respect, like Mother Teresa, or mostly Christians. So the gospel and Christian faith is so precious to me, and I think those are spiritual treasure to me too. Also, my father talk about the story of Jesus when I was a little child, so close to the Christian faith.
Sayuri feels it is significant that the center is built in the very same area where she points out in the 16th and 17th centuries, Christians were persecuted. It was a time, she says, in which the encounter between Christianity and Buddhism ended in tragedy. Furukawa brought the temple's activities to the world stage, lecturing at international faith conferences, collaborating with the Catholic lay community Sant'Egidio, and many others. He met Pope John Paul II and Mother Teresa of Calcutta. In 1998, he met Sister Helen Prejean, whose anti-death penalty book, Dead Man Walking, made the Catholic nuns a household name. She has supported the temple's activities ever since, particularly projects demanding the reopening of cases of prisoners unjustly condemned.
My father met Sister Helen Prejean in Bucharest, Romania in 1998 when my father was invited to the international conference. Then they appealed against the death penalty. And then when my father received an email from Sister Helen Prejean, he passed away 1 week ago, unfortunately. So we asked Sister Helen to join our meeting in Tokyo. She came and she saw the video about my father's life story. Then she gave her lecture. Suddenly she said, "I will come to Japan to help your campaign next year." So I was very happy, and she was like a light in the darkness we faced at that time. So since 2002, she has been supporting our campaign.
Together with Sister Prejean, the temple has created an immense support network of Japanese and American law students who help their anti-death penalty campaign. Perhaps for the first time, Sayuri says, we are seeing many consciences change, even here in our country, which is so influenced by the idea of vendetta. Some 80% of Japanese support the death penalty, but change is in the air. The nation's new justice minister, Kaiko Chiba, a known opponent of capital punishment, recently opened the doors of a chilling execution chamber where convicts are hanged at an hour's notice. The first ever television images sparked a national debate on the death penalty, which looks unlikely to subside anytime soon.
Right now, we face very difficult things, but we will carry on our work because my father's spirit lives on within us and in our work. About 80% of Japanese people support the death penalty, so it's very difficult for us to carry on our work. But spiritually, I'm very happy inside.
Sayuri Furukawa of the Saimetsan Schweitzer Temple. Japan, along with the U.S., is one of the only two group of eight rich countries that retains capital punishment. It currently has 107 inmates on death row. 58 countries today still retain capital punishment across the globe. In his 1995 encyclical Evangelium Vitae, Pope John Paul II wrote that the primary purpose of the punishment which society inflicts is to redress the disorder caused by the offense. Public authority, he wrote, must redress the violation of personal and social rights by imposing on the offender an adequate punishment for the crime as a condition for the offender to regain the exercise of his or her freedom. In this way, authority also fulfills the purpose of defending public order and ensuring people's safety, while at the same time offering the offender an incentive and help to change his or her behavior and be rehabilitated. It is clear that for these purposes to be achieved, the nature and extent of the punishment must be carefully evaluated and decided upon, and ought not to go to the extreme of executing the offender except in cases of absolute necessity. In other words, when it would not be possible otherwise to defend society. Today, however, wrote the Pope, as a result of steady improvements in the organization of the penal system, such cases are very rare, if not practically non-existent.